when the wind blows puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Time for Abandoned Manitoba. Gordon Goldsborough joins us now. And we've heard about endangered animals before, endangered species. And on today's episode, we're talking about endangered buildings. Gordon's here to tell us more. Good morning.
Good morning, Nadja.
Remind us about what you told us last week.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, the National Trust for Canada released its top 10 endangered buildings list for this year. And this is an annual list that comes out every year, and it lists, you know, structures that are in some danger of being torn down. And this year, there were two of them in Manitoba. And I thought, well, let's talk about the two of them and maybe add a few more to make sort of a top 10 list for Manitoba.
So what is the National Trust?
It's a national charitable organization. Anyone can join it, but you, of course, the underlying premise is that you're interested in the conservation of heritage buildings, heritage structures of other kinds. It's both professionals and members of the general public. And in fact, you get access to structures, not so much here in Manitoba, but and elsewhere in Canada. You can visit. They get discounts to historic places, but maybe even more so. I know I love, for example, the fact that if, as a member of the National Trust, I can visit these buildings in the UK, in England, in Wales, in Scotland, Northern Ireland, as well as in Australia. So there's an additional benefit beyond the borders of Canada. And as I said, every year the National Trust in here in Canada produces its top 10 list.
What makes a building endangered?
Well, according to the National Trust, there have to be at least three attributes to make a building worthy of putting on the list. First of all, it's got to have some sort of historical significance. In other words, there's got to be some kind of bigger picture that the place illustrates, some kind of importance that it had. Two is that it's got to be threatened with loss. Like there's some imminent danger to it being demolished, for example. And the third one, and I'm not so sure there's one I go along with, but they say a community support for saving the building. And, you know, to my mind, that is something that certainly applies in Ontario where you've got a large population base. You know, but the problem for me is that if you lived in a place that was a fairly small population, does that mean if there's not enough community that it's not worth saving places? Or if you had a place that was far away from any population, does that mean you just ignore it? No, I think the need for a community, I think, could involve a global community, you know, especially in this day and age that you can communicate widely. So I don't think that that third criterion is quite so important. But anyway, the idea is that they put this list together annually, and the idea is to draw attention to these and hopefully try to encourage people to conserve them. And over time, they reevaluate the places that are on these lists. They put them into, say, the four categories. The first one, of course, is endangered. And then if the building is torn down, they put it into the lost category. But if there's some positive movement, they can call it positive outlook, meaning there's some suggestion that maybe we'll save it. And then ones that are saved, well, they've been repurposed. They're now actively in use and there's no further threat.
How common is it for their annual list to have two buildings from one province?
It's not uncommon for Ontario because, of course, Ontario is a big place. In fact, if you look at the list they've had going back several years, the majority of those are in Ontario, of course, big population base. Second most in Quebec. But there has never been two in one year for Manitoba. Never. And in fact, if you go back from 2005, when this list first began, to 2016, there have only been four buildings altogether from Manitoba. Four altogether. And so, of course, having two in one year is unprecedented. And I suspect this is because this year is kind of significant. Every year they have an annual conference, and the idea is to bring together these, you know, heritage professionals as well as, you know, interested amateurs like me, and we talk about historic conservation. And most of the time, those conferences are held in Eastern Canada, reflecting where the majority of their members are. This year, for the first year in quite a long time, it's being held here in Winnipeg, the third week of October of this year. And I think, therefore, the reason they put two buildings in Manitoba on the list is they wanted to raise public awareness. You know, people in Manitoba get you know, worked up, but wow, we have two buildings on the top 10 list, and maybe we should go to that conference. So I think that's probably why they put two on this year.
So what are the two listed buildings from Manitoba?
Well, I have to say, they're both buildings that we've talked about in this series before, so that neither of them should come as a surprise to long-term listeners. And I'm a little hesitant that I would have picked either one of these two. I mean, you could quibble, I suppose, about why you put one on and why you take another one off.
The National Trust really should have checked in with Gordon Goldsborough, is all I'm saying.
Okay, well, we'll see. But I mean, I would argue that, for example, one of them was the Reuben Block here in Winnipeg. We've talked about it as a building in limbo. You know, it's basically, it was a commercial space on the main floor, a residential space on the upper floors. It was damaged in a fire back in 2014. Everybody got kicked out, and it's been kind of empty ever since. And, you know, there's been a lot of public attention. They want to open it again. They want to get it restored. And so far, the owner has resisted any attempt to do that. And whether or not that's a significant building historically, I mean, it had an important architect, true. But in terms of the overall significance, it's a building like many others. So I personally, I wasn't so sure that one warranted inclusion, but hey, it's on the list. And the other one on their list is the Bertel Residential School. That was actually the very first episode of Abandoned Manitoba 4 years ago.
Really?
Yeah, very first one. We talked about the old residential school, a three-story brick building in Bertel in western Manitoba. And of course, in terms of its historical significance, absolutely. I mean, the fact that many people had bad experiences at residential schools, you know, you might want to keep it simply as a reminder of that experience. On the other hand, people have argued maybe we should demolish it just to try to obliterate that bad experience. I don't know. But the fact is that this particular building is really not in good condition, and therefore I'm not so sure I would have put it on the list. It suffered very badly from water infiltration, from vandalism. I frankly don't know if it's even salvageable. So I don't know if I would have put it on my list, but it's on the list and nevertheless. So there we go.
So let's create our own Gordon Goldsborough top 10 endangered list for Manitoba. What other sites would you want to include?
Okay, so we're going to add 8 to make it up to an even 10. And I'm going to list them in order of oldest to youngest.
Okay.
Not because I'm trying to prioritize them anyway. You know, the older is more important or anything. Just that's the way I'm going to organize them, okay? So our number one, number three, rather.
Yep.
It would be the York Factory Depot building on Hudson Bay, built between 1831 and 1838. And that makes it the oldest wooden building surviving in Manitoba, and it was for many years the center of the fur trade, arguably the most important sort of historical building attached to the fur trade in Canada. So a really significant building. In terms of the threat, well, it's riverbank erosion. It's on the edge of the Hayes River, and they estimate that in the not-too-distant future, it's going to topple into the river because of the gradual erosion of the riverbank, possibly exacerbated by climate change.
What about the number four?
I would put Kennedy House as number four, built between 1866 and 1870, a magnificent stone house built by Master Mason Duncan McCrae for Arctic explorer William Kennedy. And it's been described as one of the 6 most significant historical homes in Manitoba. It's really quite attractive. And in fact, for many years, it was operated as sort of a tea house and a museum. Until 2015, the provincial government who owns the building closed it. They kicked out the last operator of the tea house, and they've been rather evasive about the plans for the building. And there's a lot of us who worry that, you know, maybe demolition may be in its future. And that would really worry me, I think.
Please tell me there's a grain elevator on this list.
Of course there is. You know me. And in this case, it's the Elva grain elevator down in the southwestern corner of the province, built in late 1897. And as far as I can tell, that makes it the oldest standard plan, meaning elevator that we would recognize as an elevator, the oldest standard plan elevator in Canada. The threat is, well, the owner is recently deceased, I'm told. The elevator itself is open to the elements. It's structurally rather deteriorated. I fear that someone's going to come along either, you know, just by vandals or just somebody feeling they're doing a community service will burn it down or tear it down or something. And it's too bad because it's really, let's say, the oldest in Canada.
So what's at number 6 on this list?
Well, dating from 1901, I would say it's the Leary Brickworks. Now, of course, this was something that there were all over the province at one time. There were brickworks at various places where they manufactured bricks. This is the last remaining example in the province. And not only does that make it significant in its own right, The bricks that it made went into numerous buildings, including our provincial legislature here in Manitoba. So I think that's, an interesting thing. Unfortunately, it's not in good condition. The brick kiln where they fired the bricks, the chimney, they're both cracked and deteriorating. The press building is open to the elements. I fear it's not long for this world, and it's too bad because that's an important thing at one time where they made bricks. They're all over the province in buildings in various places.
We also have a school on this list.
Rapid City Consolidated School, built in 1902. Through the 20th century, you see a gradual consolidation of schools, kids from one-room schoolhouses in rural Manitoba increasingly moving into towns to attend larger schools, and of course, eventually those larger schools giving way to even larger schools. And I think I like this particular one, not only because it's a nice two-story building, it has an important connection to a famous author, Frederick Philip Grove. It was used for quite a time as the library. It was used as a local museum. It's been closed since 2004. And although there are plans to redevelop it as a residential and daycare space, well, nothing has really transpired. And I worry that they may just decide it's not worth it and tear the building down. And a good example of a consolidated school from the 20th century.
All right. What's number 8 on the list of the top 10 endangered buildings in Manitoba?
Well, in Ninette, we have the sanatorium that dates from 1909, and it was the very first tuberculosis sanatorium, of course, for the treatment of TB. It was also the largest, and so for decades, it treated Manitobans who suffered from that disease. Of course, it's still not something that we've vanquished. There are still people today, particularly in the Indigenous community, particularly in the North. TB is still an issue. Unfortunately, in this case, the owner of the building lives outside of the province. The building is large. It's empty. It's unmaintained, and I fear that it's unfortunately going to suffer some sort of ignominious end.
Number 9.
In Brandon, we have the A.E. McKenzie Building, dating from 1910, and for many decades, it was the tallest building in Brandon. It was, until not long ago, the home to the largest seed distributor in Western Canada. So if you were a gardener, you would buy your seeds from McKenzie Seeds. It's been empty since 2008, a little over a decade. And although there were plans to redevelop it into condos or into rental apartments, they seem to have been abandoned, those plans. And in fact, parts of its facade are now falling to the street. And that suggests the building is deteriorating. So I worry about that building.
We have reached the end of our list. What's the final one?
Well, I prefer not to call this a top list 10 list of endangered buildings because I, in fact, put an abandoned structure on, too. So in our 10th position is the Turtle River Bowstring Arch Bridge. And of course, you know that in addition to having a fixation with grain elevators, I also have one with bridges.
And one-room schoolrooms.
And one-room schoolrooms, you bet. And the fact of this is that bridges were a very important part of the provincial highway network that made possible all of the transportability that we enjoy today. And in this particular case, we're talking about a nice little Bowstring Arch bridge south of St. Rose de Lac. Now, a bowstring arch has got two large arches on either side. Makes it look kind of like a bow of a bow and arrow. Very graceful looking, quite attractive. This one was on the original provincial highway number 5. They then redirected the highway to the east, and this one was essentially abandoned. It is used for local traffic. And the reason I worry about it is that in the last couple of years, two of these bowstrings have been demolished, one at Clearwater, one at St. Anne. And there's only about 6 of them left. And from one time, there used to be dozens of them all over the province. The problem is that they're not well suited to modern traffic. They're narrow, they're lightweight, and especially with agricultural equipment, they're not easy to cross. So I fear that all of the bowstring arches are threatened. And this one, because it used to be part of a provincial highway, I think it's particularly significant. So I would put it on my list.
A commendable job, Gordon, putting this list together. I'm sure there were probably others that you considered.
Well, you know, every time you put a list like this together, it's a personal affair. And just as I'd add a site, then I think, oh no, there's another place I should put on it as well. So I'm sure our listeners, some of them will look at the list and go, oh, I wouldn't have put that on there. I'd put this other one on. And that's certainly true. I have at least a half a dozen other things I would have put on too if I had a list of top 15 maybe.
And what's the clue for next week?
We're going to visit a large abandoned building near Inwood in the Interlake that, from the look of it, sits in the middle of a battleground.
Gordon, thank you. See you next week.
See you next week.
No matter where I go,
Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons ago.